Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome in to 11 Personnel, presented by Monticello Bank. Nick Roush and Adam Luckett here with you in the middle of a busy time in the Bluegrass. Glad you all have joined us because you watched the ESPN scheduling show, Luckett, but this is where the real meat and potatoes is for this Kentucky football schedule release. I don't need Tim Tebow telling me about how excited he is to watch all these non-conference games that we've already known about for a year.
It's funny you say that. My wife Taylor said the same thing, or something along those lines. Yeah, I don't know what the bowl show is. Obviously worse, but they didn't milk it as bad as I thought they would. Once they started, they kept it rolling, which was nice.
I thought we would get an ad break or two in between game time announcements, but fortunately they went through the first 12 weeks in 30 minutes. Without any commercials, so we did 30 minutes of uninterrupted watching. And you know what? I bet they had pretty good engagement during that time. I have a feeling their retention was pretty solid with people locked in for that first 30 minutes of that show.
Yeah, I think as Stephen Peake shows us the YouTube graphs, sometimes I think the ESPN graphs, that first 30 minutes of SEC Network at 7 o'clock on a Wednesdays pretty high. Like when they look at the when the suits in Mickey Mouse offices look at the graphs, oh wow, what do we, we should do this all the time, why is this so high? I think that's what will pop up. But yeah, again, SEC is NFL light and they're treating it like the NFL. The NFL has their big schedule release show whenever it is. If only we could fix when the portal happened, right? Yeah, and stretch that out. But the sport is tied to an academic calendar, unfortunately, so we've got everything crammed in a certain period right now. But just excited to have the schedule and so we can kind of break out and look ahead. Mm-hmm. In many ways, Nick, my first takeaway going into the show, I was like, man, I was worried I would come away from this thinking, God, they got a tough draw. And I don't really think that. If you made me make a pick, I think it kind of feels like a 7-5 schedule, maybe 8-4.
Oh, we're going to make you pick. We're going to pick all of them. But we got some content to make, buddy.
I think it's well balanced, right? You get the two bye weeks in a nice part. You start off with the four home games, which is, I think, from back when I was a season ticket holder, that's tough to do that. Pack it up and go four Saturdays in a row is tough, but two of them are pretty big home games. And then you got, I think, home balance. You get Auburn in October, a big home game. You get Louisville in November, big home game. And then you got some other ones that aren't as hyped with Vanderbilt and Murray State. But at least you have some balance there in the months where you get one big home, literally one big home game a month and throughout the season.
Balance is going to be the word that everybody uses to describe the schedule. And it feels like it's pretty rare where – you know, this season, the most recent one, it was very backloaded. The year before, but 2021, you know, it was just like, all right, well, how are they going to do in October? That's a brutal October, but the front and back ends are pretty light. Normally, it just kind of has a way of you go through like one or two really tough stretches, and it is going to be quite a wake up, right? You get at least, but it could be worse, right? Like Brock Vandegrift's going to be able to get his toes wet against Southern Miss, and that South Carolina defense, not great. I don't think they're going to dramatically improve year over year, even though Kentucky struggled against them this year. But you're like, okay, well, he's got 2 weeks to kind of get ready for that big Georgia game, and then you kind of get a come down too before you got to hit the road to Ole Miss. That is, even though I do like where the byes are positioned. Five games in a row, and then going on that road trip before you finally get to exhale. That's going to be it's going to be quite the sprint to start the season. The exact opposite of this year, Luckett, where it's October and we feel like they haven't played a game yet.
Yeah, I think the difference is stark there. Getting into the meat and potatoes of the year. For me, Nick, I'm looking forward to those two couch days on October 5th and November 9th. to sit back in my basement and watch the football. I love the two bye week season. I wish we could do this every year.
It makes it
so much better to me. You get some thinner Saturdays when the byes pop up, but you get to, I think, consume more of it as a viewer and as a fan.
I think we got
which is fun.
A November 9 is a pretty big rivalry week elsewhere, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, let's pull up the SEC slate here that you have in the post at KSR that includes
Alabama,
the schedule.
LSU is November 9th. Georgia Ole Miss, November 9th.
Florida goes to Texas. Nick, I want you to, before we get out of here and before we move on, I want you to pull up Florida's schedule and just read it week by week. And then we'll just, you can just give your instant reactions to this. And I want people in the chat just comment as we do this.
Maybe Peek, maybe you can pull it up too, so everybody can follow along, because it is in fact a gauntlet. It's hilarious.
Oklahoma, Missouri, November 9th. That's going to be a big time atmosphere there in Como. Let's see here.
I like Texas in November. You don't want, you hate having to do those scorchers, the Florida, and now you add Texas to those really hot games that time of year. So not having to deal with those, that's going to be nice. That's going to be nice card.
The one thing I'll say with that is we're about to read this Florida schedule off. There was going to be a lot of buzz, right, if Kentucky's like 3-1 and say Texas trip was September 28th going there. It loses some of that when it's that late in the year. I mean, that's right around Champions Classic time, isn't it?
Give or take.
Yeah.
Champions Classic's probably the week before.
Yeah, so that's setting up to be a huge – it just depends on how Kentucky's doing in the year. You don't really know where. I think more preseason, people are more chomping at the bit. But you get to go to the Grove – people get to go to the Grove again in September. So, I mean, it could be interesting. There could be a huge Kentucky contingent if they did – and they could have a bad year. But it would be like, why are all these Kentucky fans in Austin?
Here to enjoy 40 acres.
Yeah.
Drink some Lone Star beers.
Yes, exactly.
All right, let's read this Florida schedule, because it's quite hilarious. They start with Miami, state championship game.
Might have Cameron Ward at quarterback. I think the Canes are the favorite to land him as of right now.
Top Florida quarterback, according to most folks. Hey, you know, at least they get to play Samford, the Bulldogs, in week two. But A&M at Mississippi State. UCF at home, too. Why did they – oh, gosh. They're in for it. At Tennessee, then little old Kentucky comes to town. They do at least still get that bye week before Georgia, but then they go from the cocktail party to going to Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, Florida State to end the year. I mean, that's what, five top 10 teams to end the season in a row?
Yeah, on paper it will be, yes. Preseason poll. To me, it's the start, right? We all know if Billy Napier doesn't get off to a good start, like, he's done. But to me, it's the start. Like, you've got – that Miami game is huge. That A&M game in week three, new coach is against a new coach is huge. At Mississippi State, new coach you're facing, that's huge. UCF, you can't lose that one at home. So they could start 5-0. I don't think that's crazy. But will they, right? See, like, if he takes a couple losses, he's toast. Napier's toast. I mean, the start is everything here.
Those idiot radio hacks in the city of Louisville. Oh, you got to play somebody hard in your non-conference, blah, 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 blah. Like, you know, it's cool for the sport that Florida is playing Miami, UCF, and Florida State in the same year. It's not going to be really cool for Billy Napier. It's not really going to be really cool for those fans. Like, that's – if you don't win all three – you gotta win it. He has to win two of them. No excuses. Maybe you can get away if you've got seven wins going to that Florida State game or something like that. You can get off the hook if you don't win that one at the end of the year. But asking for trouble, scheduling that non-conference. And I know there's some fans out there who they want to do one of these Labor Day weekend games at neutral sites against a big-time opponent. And you know what? While that sounds fun and all, you still got the Grove in Texas this year. You're getting to go to Jacksonville for a bowl game. Like, that's the kind of trade-off you have. Like, this ain't college basketball, where you need these big neutral site games. Like, you have plenty of other opportunities to have fun in the regular SEC's football season.
Yeah, one thing I'm interested in, Nick, getting into the summer is at the meetings, spring meetings, Greg Sankey's going to pitch the 9 games again.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a feeling these teams are going to get this schedule and they're going to be like, hell no. We won 8. Like, we don't know where the playoffs go on. We've got these big conferences. Georgia just got left out of the playoff. We want to stick it at. So, like, Kentucky, whenever that was, last summer or the summer before.
It was last May,
And they were the only one sticking their neck out. And they could end up being on the right side of that. Saban's has already switched with Alabama. Alabama's the big one in their corner now.
That was, that was what was really significant. Was going into that, you thought Kentucky was going to be the lone wolf, and they got Saban. And it was basically pitching them on the playoff, because making the playoff would be more important. And Mitch Barnhart, the oldest guy in the room, the guy who's been on the playoff committee, was like, listen, we don't know where this playoff's going. Do we really want to do this to ourselves without guaranteed more money from ESPN?
So that's something I think to watch at those meetings. The discourse that comes out regarding that, because you're asking for a lot. Like, for even your best team, you're asking a lot of them. I mean, even Georgia's slate is a lot tougher this year. I mean, specifically when you add. Well, Texas is souped. You're getting souped up Texas, at least right now, the way they're looking with Sark. And Oklahoma has consistently, for most of our lives, Nick, been a top 10 football program in college football. That's what you're adding into this league, on top of everything else you got. You got Kirby Smart's a 2-time national champion. Nick Saban's the best to ever do it. He might about to win another one. There's just a lot there. And so I'm just interested to see if we get the hard 9 push from the guy from Birmingham, or if the member institutions push back and say, we want 8. We don't want to play 9.
And I read another schedule for you.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, Shane Beamer, he's in a similar spot to our buddy Billy Napier. 5-7 year. Didn't go to a bowl game. They're desperately spending nil bucks right now. I mean, they're throwing money at Ryan Sanders, Jaden McGowan. They're probably going to for quarterback. LT Overton, another defense. I mean, if they're a high-priced person, they're throwing money at him because Shane don't give a damn. He's like, I have to win now. This isn't like NFL free agency where you got to worry about the cap for a dead year. Ownership doesn't care. Shane's spending money to win because he has to win now. And this schedule he's got, they got a little bit of a breather in the non-conference, but similar to Jacksonville State, they open with Old Dominion. They traveled to Kentucky, a place they've won once in like 10 years. LSU, and then Akron and a bye. Well, after the bye week, the month of October, it goes Ole Miss at Bama at Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. You've got a bye, and then Texas A&M. It just
tough middle stretch is really the kicker there.
And that can really just suck the wind out of a season if you go. I mean, they could go from September 21st to November 9th without a win.
Right. They could end up being 2-5 going into November.
Yeah, which that was kind of similar to this year. They had a win out. They almost did to get to that bowl. But, like, that is – it just can really demoralize you, right? Like, losing games in a row, if you can just get one to stop the bleeding in there, then everybody kind of chills out a little bit. But that could be a rough, rough stretch there for Shane Beamer.
That week 2, Kentucky is their biggest game to me when I look at their schedule. Because if they win that, they're probably 3-1 going into the bye and hosting Ole Miss in close to ranked or whatever. And then they probably get out of that. You know, they might end up being 3-4 out of that, but they got wins in the back half, so they have a good chance to get to 7, and that'd be a step forward. But if you lose to Kentucky, then you're flirting with really another 5-7 season again, and that would not be the right direction for Shane Beamer. I mean, it's a big year for him. I don't think he's going to end up on the hot seat no matter what happens, but it could be a year that sets up the hot seat year. And so I think for them, it's that Kentucky game is so big because they play LSU. They play Alabama, I believe. They play Oklahoma on the road. I mean, they play Clemson on the road. I mean, just right there, that's brutal. Ole Miss is going to be a preseason top 10 team. They have to win that Kentucky game, and they really need to beat Missouri. They're at home. They've lost a bunch in a row to Missouri. So week two, and it would, for Kentucky too, it's huge. I mean,
yeah.
I think Kentucky's got a legit chance to probably make a run at 8-4 with this schedule, Nick. I think if we're being realistic, they could get there. Okay. But they can't. Like, South Carolina is one. Like, they have to get that one to me.
Yeah.
And they have to get Louisville at home. Like, those are the two to me that are the most important. Like, if you any path you draw up to 8-4, which I think is probably the reasonable ceiling here, you should look at. Those are two you have to win.
Well, and here's one other one that you have to win. Second year coach at an unstable institution. It's a home game. You've lost a lot of home games, and I know there's not a lot of animosity towards them, but you got to beat Auburn. And I know the portal is open, and we're not sure exactly who's going to be there. I'd imagine – I haven't really seen them in the mix for any of these big guys.
The quarterback recruiting has been strange there.
Yeah.
Because you thought they would have been in the mix for a big quarterback, and that just hasn't developed.
Even like Grayson McCall, like they weren't even – I mean, they've been non-existent, and it's just like, are they really going to ride with Peyton Thorne, right? Like, is that what you're going to do? I don't know, but that's just that's going to be an important one to win at home. And you know, and that's how you have one of those special seasons like it is taking care of business at home. You have 8 home games, and pull that back up real quick, Steven, because I haven't memorized it quite just yet, but. If you got 8 home games, who's to say you can't win 7 of them?
Right.
Right? Like, if you win 7 of them, then all you got to do is steal one at Tennessee, at Texas, at Florida, at Ole Miss to get there. So,
like, yeah, but I think you could say that about the last 2 years, though, if they just win their home games, right, the winnable ones, and they haven't done it. That's the crux here to me.
Mm-hmm. And that's why you know, this whole scheduling game that we like to play, it's a lot of fun. But, I mean, the 8-win season is take care of business at home. You can slip up against Georgia. And then I don't think Florida's the only one that, I mean, they'd probably be favored or toss, you know, depending on how things go, toss up. But they'll be touchdown-ish underdogs, I would imagine, and all the rest of them. Unless the volleyball player is just complete bust.
Yeah. That'd be cool. I mean, to me, it's – to get an 8-4, there's really two paths. Like, you either go 7-1 at home, pick off one on the road, or you go 6-2 at home, pick off two on the road. So that would essentially be you would beat Florida, and then probably you get one of Tennessee or Ole Miss, which is not, I don't think, crazy.
Yeah.
And then that builds in the random home game you might lose to in Auburn or maybe a South Carolina.
Yeah.
But I think it's really important, Nick. The best Mark Stoops teams outside of 2016, and probably I guess you could say about 2019. So maybe not, it doesn't work as well as it was in my head just a minute ago. Mm-hmm. But they've all got off to fast starts. You know, we've seen fast starts crumble, but the best teams, his 9-3 teams, have gotten off to fast starts. So it feels critical to me to win that South Carolina. You really can't lose a South Carolina 3 in a row. You've already lost to Tennessee here 3 in a row. You know, you really cannot – you've got to turn that series around. I mean, that's just such a huge game from that aspect. And I think you made a good point with Carolina and the portal. This feels like kind of an all-in season for Beamer. If it doesn't hit this year – and I'm talking just get to 7-5-ish and just keep that train moving and keep the recruiting momentum going. If it doesn't get that there for him, it could fall off the tracks there, I think, for him. But that's just a huge game, week two. Like that's a monstrous game, and I think a lot how the season goes to me will a lot be defined by what happens in that game. Now there's time to turn it around, but it's hard to envision them having a good season with another loss to South Carolina.
Right. No, I'm completely with you because then you're staring at Georgia, and it feels like half the year you're just clawing to get to 500. So I have a feeling when we're doing our season prediction video in August. There's going to be a lot of 7-5 predictions. Probably sprinkle in a couple 8-4s and 6-6 and a 9-3. Like, those are definitely the outliers. But we kind of mentioned it when all of this stuff was happening about changing our brains. That 9-3 benchmark that was set, it's going to be really, it's harder to get to now. It just is in this new SEC. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be harder for everybody. Everybody's going to have to adjust. And I'm fascinated,
yeah,
like, just looking at all the schedules, how everything's going to unfold week to week. It's going to be something, man.
The one thing I'll say, the 2021 team that went 9-3, we went into that year thinking they could have been in trouble in October with the LSU and Florida games. They were home games, but LSU and Florida were preseason top 10s. You never know how the season is going to shake out, right? You never know how the schedule is going to hit. We predict and we think it might happen, but you never know. Does living on the portal edge for Lane Kiffin, does that finally just catch up to them and they have culture issues? Is this a year they crumble? You know, is Florida a train wreck when you go down there, right, on October 19th? Does Texas and take a huge step back once they get real big expectations? And then does that become kind of a winnable game that late in the year where maybe they have a roster crisis at that point with guys looking to leave?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you
know, there's a pretty big game they're playing the week after Kentucky comes to town too. That's a look-ahead spot, right? That bringing back Texas A&M rivalry.
You never know how the schedule is going to hit. So that's always something to be aware of. And at the same time, Auburn could take a huge jump in year two, Hugh Freeze, and they could be kind of a top 10-ish team. So you never know what it's going to look like. So that's what makes the sport fun, is the unpredictability of it. Mm-hmm. But just on paper, Kentucky seems like a 7-5 team in the SEC right now. And that's what I kind of feel looking at the schedule. I think they have a good chance to go 8-4, but 7-5 will probably be my pick. I think they probably pick one off on the road somewhere, and I think they lose two games at home. They'll lose to Georgia, and they'll lose one of the others, one of the unexpected. But they'll go 2-2 in SEC play at home, and they'll beat Louisville at the end of the year, and 7-5, hello Charlotte or wherever. Here we come.
Mayo in December.
Maybe Vegas.
Maybe. Speaking of Vegas, we're going to be able to play all of those games. You can get in on all the action with our friends at FanDuel Sportsbook. We got bowl games this weekend. We got a Pigskin preview we're rolling out tomorrow, previewing all of the action so that you can get on the action with our friends at FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, where right now when you download the FanDuel app and you put in promo code PERSONNEL, $5 money line wager is going to get you $150 in bonus bets. All you got to do is win. Just throw that $5 money line bet down. Get a winner. Get $150 in bonus bets. And don't forget to use the code PERSONNEL when you sign up today. 11 PERSONNEL. That's us. FanDuel.com/PERSONNEL at FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. It's bowl season, man. We're going to be betting on games at noon. You cannot miss out on the action. Download it now. Just remember, you got to be 21 and present in Kentucky. First online real money wager. Only $10 first deposit required. Bonus bets issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at FanDuel, sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, let's turn the page from the schedule. I got to take the Santa hat off. It's like 1,000 degrees.
Santa hats, they make me sweat, man. Nothing keeps heat in better than a Santa hat.
I know. Like, and they don't.
Why do people wear toboggans? Just put a damn Santa hat on. Nothing works better than that.
The fat guy.
Chris
right,
knew what
man.
He was doing.
He picked the most perfect hat to keep you warm. You don't even have to cover your ears too. That thing makes you toastier than you know what. Which, shout out to all the folks who you know, impersonate the Jolly Good Fellow from time to time, because you got to just be sweating under there. I don't know. Whew. Speaking of sweating, we were sweating out some portal players the last couple of days. Like, the Pats got. It's fun too, especially when we kind of hear about these. I thought Chip Traynham was going to happen on Monday. Didn't happen until Tuesday. thought Macklin was going to happen this morning. Didn't happen until 2. That waiting period is the worst. I hate it. I can't stand it. But then once it arrives, you're like, hell yeah, chocolate chips and my pancakes. Chip train them. Come on down. Look at, I think we just, if we just carbon copy our Ray Davis analysis from a year ago, a lot of it's going to be the same, just without the production, but at a much, 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 much better school.
Yeah, I like that you brought up that name there. Because I think, like, the rap and the story and the reputation of Chip Traynham was, like, big tailback. Goes to Ohio State was, like, their power back. It was, like, short yardage, ran people over. But, and so you think, oh, Chris, like, Chris Rodriguez, Benny Snell. But when I watch him on tape, that's not really what I see. He's not running people over inside the box. He's not necessarily, I would, just moving piles, no matter what, like we saw Chris Rodriguez do forever. I think he's a smarter runner. I think he shows the ability to press and bounce. I think he has good feel, at least what I've, some couple games I watched. He's got the juice, I think, to bounce it and get to the outside and get the edge. He's similar to Ray Davis to me in that mold, where he's not a small back, but I don't think he's necessarily a thumper as a runner inside. But he gets his shoulder square and he falls forward typically, and that's what I really like about him. He was using the pass game, a third down situation. You didn't really get to see his pass catching ability at Ohio State, but that he was out there, I think there's maybe something there. And we saw what Davis did in the pass game this season. And I think for Kentucky, you have to look at the market here, Nick, at tailback. Rocket Sanders, they looked at, and I think there was conversations there.
Yeah.
You mentioned South Carolina. It seems like they're spending some bucks in NIL. Yeah, and you have to remember, South Carolina swung and missed on every priority portal running back they looked at last year. I think Logan Diggs was a big one. He went from Notre Dame to LSU. Can't think of any big ones other than that off the top of my head, really hurt them.
Well, they went after DSK too. I mean,
they went after DSK at the end. Yeah. That really hurt them. They had no running. They had a receiver playing running back last year. And so they wanted to get one of the top guys. And so I think they probably paid significantly for Rocket Sanders. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the word out on him too was that he was asking more money than anybody was really willing to pay. But since it's a very small market, right? It's like him, Trevor Etienne, and that's really about it. So I think he ended up commanding that money just because there was so few out there. And for Vince Marrow to be able to sneak this guy out of Ohio State, who, from my understanding, like, they liked him a lot as far as what he did on the field. I don't think they were ready to anoint him as RB1 because there's some thought that Travion Henderson might return. So he was ready to go be an RB1 somewhere after debating the positional stuff. So that's why, all things considered, nice job, right? Nice job.
Yeah, there's always a wait and see with running backs, how it's going to hit. I thought Davis was a high floor addition for Kentucky. I never thought he would be an first team All-SEC back this year. We're training him. I think it's similar. I'm not sure if the ceiling's as high because he hasn't done it. At least Davis had done it before. But I think I could see why they like him. I think he has some traits similar to Davis as they kind of veer away from this run-heavy offense. I could see why they liked him. And he's got 2 years of eligibility, so you never know.
Right.
But you got potentially having for 2 years. And I like they obviously want to develop some of the younger guys, the freshmen they're going to have to on the roster. But I like just the skill set balance between him and Demi Sumo-Karangbe.
Yeah.
Demi, more of a receiver, could do some third down stuff. But I think he can – Traynham can do some of that, and he's more of your standard down tailback. So I definitely think he's going to come in here and be an RB1. And, Nick, from the usage we've seen from this program, you have to think that's the workload he's going to get He's going to be the top guy. They haven't been a committee offense at tailback.
We got that wrong this summer.
Yeah. And so I think we'll have to see it. I think they deserve benefit of the doubt on some of these running back evaluations, because it's been a long time since they've gone in the year and we've gotten in the year and be like, man, they just don't have guys at tailback. They always at least have one guy they can really lean on. And so you have to trust them there, I think. And I get the fit and why they like train them. And it's another Ohio State transfer joining Ben Chrisman, Darian Henry-Young, Jansen Dunn on the roster. So we'll see how that works. None of those guys really hit year one, but none of them played as much as Trainum did in Columbus.
Darian Henry-Young, too, was coming along real nicely in year two. Now, all the guys you mentioned, too, were longer developmental guys, right, where they had 3 and 4 years left of eligibility. I did like what Darian Henry-Young was doing later on in the season before he got out for the year. But
Dunn played well against Louisville, I thought, in the 10, 11, 12 snaps he got there at the end. He flashed. And so I'll be interested to see him potentially in the bowl game if he gets some of those nickel snaps.
He should. He certainly should. The guy who I'm really high on, Luckett, when I first saw this guy, I was worried that the Cats wouldn't have a chance because he entered the transfer portal during the grad transfer week, so before it officially opened, and that meant everybody got to be on him, right? That first day, it's Penn State, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, South Carolina, and Kentucky's just kind of in there with a bunch of other schools who all need receivers, and he's a 1,000-yard receiver who was top 10 in the nation in explosive pass receptions. It's like, man, I like this kid, but I don't know if they'll be able to get him. And then Kentucky had an in-home visit late last week. They did enough there to get him to reciprocate. He returns on an official visit over the weekend after mulling over a few days. I think with some of the urgence from quarterback Brock Vandegrift, Cats get it done, and Jamori Macklin announces his commitment to Kentucky. And I'm not going to what's the word I'm looking for? Like, it's a little different in that he's not he's kind of Berrion Brown light, but like I don't know. Like, I'm not going to worry about fitting all these guys in the right place. Just give me guys who can produce. And this dude, 39 of his 57 receptions were for first downs. If he gets the ball, he's moving the sticks like that. That's the kind of guy you need, the kind of playmaker you need to have on the football field. And when they're going a little bit lighter on tight ends, they're going to need to use a lot of receivers. And this is a guy that can stretch out a defense. That's something like it. I remember having these press conferences with Eddie Graham 7 years ago, and he's talking about needing to get playmakers, stretch defense, need to get playmakers, stretch defense. They haven't had that since Jeff Badet. They're going to have it next year with Jamori Macklin.
Yeah, and I wrote about this today. And Badet was the guy I pulled. 2016, Nick, Badet passes of 20-plus air yards, had 7 receptions on 16 targets for 305 yards and 3 touchdowns. And that even included 2 drops. Everyone knows the big one against Georgia.
Correct.
But he was number 2 in the SEC that year in receptions of 40-plus yards with 8 of them. I mean, that really really changed the offense because they had that vertical over-the-top threat, and then they could hammer you with the run game. That 2016 offense at the end of the year,
those over routes with Juice in the middle of the field,
they were fun, and they had got that thing cooking there for a little bit. But that's just been missing from this offense for a long time. Nick, Devin Leary this year, of course, this is all from PFF data. He was 17 of 60 on passes of 20 plus air yards. It's 28.3% completion rate with 4 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. They just didn't hit the bombs. Macklin got a heavy workload at North Texas. 100 total targets. Like, they force-fed him the football. He had 34% of his targets came 20-plus yards downfield.
Yeah.
Like, they were hunting him for big plays. And he had 12 receptions in those 34 targets for 500 yards on 42.3 yards per reception.
I mean, his average depth of target was 16 yards downfield. Like,
yeah, and they credit him with four contested catches on those targets. So four of the 12 grabs he had vertically down the field were 50-50 ball situations.
Yeah, and if you watch the tape on some of those, it's like the back shoulder fighting for a guy and then just ripping the guy off and going for a big run.
So when I watch this tape, right, this is a – he plays for an air raid offense coordinator. Eric Morris played for Mike Leach at Texas Tech and was a coach under him. This is very – and it's different than Leach's, but it's more spread out. And that there are very much – it's a spread offense. It's just like – all right, spread the field, and we're running go balls, right? I mean, we're running four verts a lot, and we're trying to get deep. But I think when you dig in and watch him a little bit, he does a good job of getting releases off the line, winning quickly, and then he does a good job of finding the football down the field and making catches, ball tracking. Getting off release, getting space from defenders, and finding the ball and finishing catches. Which is something Kentucky struggled with.
I mean, those are the two big ones we talked about a lot. Creating space, solid catches.
So this is what Kentucky, I think, wanted DeKell Crowdis to be. And it just never got there.
Yeah.
I think Macklin's a guy with inside-outside versatility. I think he can play some slot, but he's mainly plays Z receiver. He played X in North Texas in a lot of his reps where he's getting open down the field, so they can maybe even put him out there. So getting all jams and releases against SEC receivers in Kentucky style is something I'm going to be watching. But this is a guy that could get open and he makes catches and makes tough catches. And there's pedigree there. We're still trying to figure out if Jeremy Macklin is his brother or his cousin. We'll probably get that confirmed once we get to talk to him. But I like the addition. I mean, and then just his recruitment, a lot of people jumped in here. Texas A&M was a big one. LSU was very much into him. Penn State was very much interested. Kentucky worked quickly to get him. I mean, they worked really hard to land his commitment. And now I like the balance there. I think just look at the receiver room where it stands right now. Dane Key, Berrien Brown, Jamori Macklin, and Anthony Brown Stevens. That's a good first four. Now, I think they need to feel good about 6-7 at some point, but I think they feel good if they had the game plan tomorrow that they have four receivers that could go out there and cause some damage.
Nick Adams does point out, yes, are we forgetting Wandale? How many times did Wandale catch a deep post route? There was one in the first 2 weeks of the season.
I'll pull that up right now, but if you go back at that year, creating explosive plays was an issue.
We talked about it
on the podcast, and sometimes I asked Liam Cohen about it, and he didn't love the questions too much. But that was an issue for the team.
There is definitely, like, if you – I pulled up his stat, like the SEC long reception leaders in there. He was first in 10-plus. I mean, he has the big plays, but a lot of those were yards after catch. The play we think about, the screen in the Florida game where he's weaving through everybody, bobbing and weaving, and then the Iowa catch to go to the – I mean, he ran 50 yards after the catch. Like, a lot of that is him playmaking after the fact. And we're talking more about getting downfield before the catch and catching the bomb, you know?
I will say his number is 16 of 31 for 553. So he got open deep and made plays, but – like you said, it wasn't the big, just huge chunk plays. But if that's what Macklin can give them, something like that, that's what you would sign up for. But only two touchdowns. I think that's probably the main thing we remember from Wandale. He got open deep, and they hit him on some deep over routes. But when you're talking about the deep post, it's what we're kind of talking about in the deep go. That was something he didn't. But he was – even explosive passing then was an issue. I mean, it was Wandale, and that was it. And that's something they got to get better at. And I think, you know, you team Brown with Macklin, which is on paper what Kentucky has.
And that's my thing, is that what Jamori Macklin did last year is what Kentucky wanted to do with Berrien Brown, right? Like, he was just a more successful version of the way they force-fed him on those back shoulder fades to the end zone, which I think what's more important right now is what you said just a moment ago that I kind of glossed over. They've got four guys they feel good about. They need to get to six. So they're going to go out and try to get somebody else. And part of the reason they need to get to six, they're not going to be as reliant on tight ends and 12 personnel next year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do all those cogs get moved around? Like, I, you know, I tried figuring out what the pitch was. Like, were they trying to sell Macklin on playing some slot? I mean, he lined up, I think it was like 8% of the time as an inside receiver and 90 as an outside. So I don't think it was that.
Yeah,
I don't
totally know. Different offense too. Yeah.
Yeah, but I also don't know, like, can Berrion even play in the slot? Like, what? Those are questions I think that will be answered down the road. But for now, what's important is they got to get, like, they still need more. And there's a lot of people, too, that, I mean, I got a text message as soon as Macklin committed, like, oh, man, I hope this doesn't mean that Berrion and Dane are leaving. Like, if Berrion wanted to leave, he would have left already, right? Like, maybe something happens and he changes his mind or something, but, like, the portal's still open and there's still some people hopping in, but if you wanted to be a big-name guy, you would have hopped in already and gotten paid. Like, why wait? So I think they're on the right path. I appreciate so Walker Yaw hopped in the chat. He's asked us on the board, and Walker, I wish I knew the answer. I would have answered and told you beforehand. I was hoping we'd have a wide receiver coach hire already. It'd be a lot easier for us. Stoops is speaking Friday afternoon after graduation. Hopefully he has something to say then. It would be kind of annoying if he didn't. Kind of annoying.
Yeah, I think a few weeks ago on this episode, I think they'll either make the hire soon or it'll be after this guy finishes signing day at his school. So I wonder if they're just waiting for that.
Could be.
And
Mark should at least tell us then, too. Be like, well, we might have to wait till after some things happen, even if he says it like that. But
because, before the portal stuff, that's usually when it would happen. Guys would get guys to sign, then they would go somewhere else, and people would complain about that they would do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking maybe
they would all go to that coaches convention and is that before
during
the
national championship? Yeah, it's during the championship.
And they would just hire everybody there after signing day before the championship, and they probably burn out the lights of those bars, those hotel bars later.
Yeah, beers are getting deleted. I think it's in San Antonio, so they're on Riverwalk smashing churros and chugging beers.
Oh. There's a lot of people asking us, too, about Shamar Porter and Raymond Cottrell. And also, how does Donovan McCauley factor in this? First off, if you can get Donovan McCauley, you get him. He's playing over all those guys. Dude's going to the NFL. Cottrell and Porter, they're still being developed. Like, they haven't done anything, right? Like, you can't. Can you really rely on a 4-star receiver at the University of Kentucky to be a...
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
4-star player until you see it on the field. Like, Key and Brown were the first guys that showed up and played right away and played well. How many Thaddeus Snodgrasses and Blake Bones have been in there, right? Like, you know, so that's still a work in progress. You can't really rely on them. Even Chris Lewis, right? Like, he was a 4-star. Tekel Crowdis, they were 4-stars. Does that just automatically mean you can rely on them to play 70% of your offensive reps? No. So, like, that's where you are with them. Where I think in my head, Luckett, it's a win if one of them is a hit. Like, when they're doing the math, you just need one of those guys to be a hit for a life after Dane Key.
Yeah, I think you bring a good point. I think depth-wise, that's where they're important. I think you didn't have any depth last year, so you have competitive depth now, I think, in practice. And then Cottrell, he's like getting a freshman. You're going to have him for a while, or should, in theory, him and Porter.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're more of long plays. But next year, they're going to be the 6th, 7th, 8th receiver. I think Kentucky, they would like to get probably one more transfer. Then they have 5 with Macklin, Key, mm-hmm. Brown, Anthony Brown Stevens, and then a player to be named later. And so I think that's what they want to get to, but we'll have to see if they get there. But I do think Cottrell and Porter, they still need some development. Development is key for them. And they're both kind of more big-bodied receivers. And so we'll see what they can do. But both are good prospects. They're just going to need some work. And that's going to be a big job, I think, for the new receiver coach, whoever that is, whenever they get on campus, is getting Kentucky in a position where they don't have to go in the portal again when these guys that are on the roster cycle out, yeah. That they'll have a Raymond Cottrell and a Shamar Porter ready to fill shoes when that turnover happens.
Right. And that was kind of a surprise Friday night. I was watching a movie with my kid. I think everybody was trying to shut the laptops Friday night, and it's like, oh, I was Shamar on Porter.
Get back Taylor to the portal. Took Taylor on a date, and of course, I was like, of course this happens.
So, did you get the usual at Roosters?
We did not. We did something nicer this time around.
Swanky, nice. I like that Derek also brought up in the chat not to sleep on Hardly Gilmore.
I like Hardly. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I like him.
That's one that we overlook because he's just been committed for so long. I'll be curious where he fits in all this because he's
young though, Nick. He reclassified.
That's true.
So he needs probably a redshirt year, I would imagine.
We'll find all this out. This is a good time to remind everybody we are 1 week until signing day. This time next week, we'll be talking about all the signees. And Shaka and everybody else who normally turns in at 8, we might do the show early because that's a freaking blitz. So we might do the show at like 4 o'clock so we can leave Lexington and like turn our brains off. The maddest I've ever been doing this job was when some dumbass scheduled a game against Utah at 11 p.m. Eastern the night of signing day.
I forgot about that.
That was also we had a lot of people that worked for us. So like I still had to work the basketball game and I was just mother effing everybody that night. That little ginger shithead.
Class of 2020. Would that have been?
Yeah, which was a big class, right?
Yeah.
That was a huge class with, like, Justin Rogers and all
that. Because I think Ox announced on signing day, didn't he?
Yeah, where they did the whole, Stoops got the sheet and handed it. Like, it was a whole ordeal. That was a huge day. And then to end it with that stupid little redhead white kid just beating an asleep Kentucky team. God, it was awful.
Yeah, spending a week in Vegas, that was wild. I went to Vegas for the second game. I wasn't there for Utah, but I went out there for Ohio State, and that was
just as good, just as inspiring.
That was one of the most disappointing basketball atmospheres I think I've ever been in for a game. Like,
yeah,
there was just like no buzz for that game at all. I was like, this is supposed to be like a big event, and there's hardly anyone here, and felt like I was just like watching. Oh, randomly, oh, let's go to this random AAU game.
It's so weird about the CBS Sports Classic. It's just if Kentucky and North Carolina.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
It's the only time people. I guess UCLA, maybe. One of the most fun games I ever went to was when the 15 team beat that UCLA team by 100 million. We had a time. We were just drinking, brewing tears. That was a lot of fun. Man, I like the buzz you talk about. It's got me fired up. And if you want to get tickets to go watch the Cats in North Carolina, there's going to be a lot of buzz in Atlanta this weekend. Game Time app, promo code KSR, $20 off your first purchase. GameTime.co. Stephen Peake's going to be down there. I know he's fired up right now. I'm sure he hasn't packed his bags yet because he likes to wait till the last minute. And you know what? If you wait till the last minute, it doesn't matter with Game Time because you can just scroll through, look at where the seats are, check the price, click it twice, boom, and all of a sudden you're in. Peak has confirmed he has not packed yet. But Game Time, it's so, like, I can't illustrate how easy it is to use. It's so easy to use that I'm going to pull up tickets for this on the ad read. I could have got $3 tickets to watch Kentucky play Louisville tonight, or not Kentucky to play Louisville, but Louisville. It's very easy to get in the door. And right now, $32 to get in the door. That's with your $20 off too, but also, they have flash deals. You ever seen a flash deal before? They've got them on the Game Time app. So go ahead, unlock it. Boom. That's a good seat. And that's for even cheaper. 10% off. Row 225. Boom. Was $98, now $83. Bing, bang, boom. CBS Sports Classic. Here's the thing, too, with Game Time. I mean, just so many affordable tickets right there at your fingertips. Promo code KSR, $20 off. Also, Kentucky sold out of their bowl at UKAthletics.com. So you need to get to Jacksonville, use Game Time. That's how you get your way into the Gator Bowl. $20 off at checkout when you use promo code KSR for your first purchase. $40 to get in the door. And with your $20 off, that's even better. Man, Game Time. West end zone, too, by the way. West side is where the Kentucky fans are sitting at the Gator Bowl. Shout out Game Time, GameTime.co. Promo code KSR for $20 off your first purchase. Like it. It is 1 week till signing day. It's a footmiss spatula season. Three guys in a week have decommitted. Are you sounding an alarm? Are you panicking?
No. I think Groves is one they probably wanted to keep, but I think it was a money thing, it sounds like.
Budget. It's only salary cap issue.
Lorenzo Cowan, I think his playing style and potential is something they don't really have, which is kind of a guy who Bendy can rush the passer, turn the corner. So in that aspect, you don't want to lose a guy like that, but they were so loaded at edge. And he's probably going to have to play Jack linebacker, and he's probably going to need to add a good amount of weight. So it was a long-term play. And then you already had Brian Robinson and Caleb Redd to play Jack in this class. So it was kind of, you know, it is what it is.
And can't you get some of that from Steven Souls, too? Isn't that why you...
Yeah, I think he's more of going to be kind of more of Boogie Watson's mobile or play off-ball Sam and then can maybe come in and be kind of a twitchy edge rusher. But he's another one that, like, just how big does he get? Like, that's the big question, I think, with Souls. I mean, he pops on tape.
Right, right.
I mean, he's a violent football player, but just size-wise. I kind of... To Tommy Zeesmer in last year's class, Nick. Like, that's a guy I like a lot. He'll knock your ass backwards, but just the size this component is just a question mark there. We'll have to see if both of them, long term, if they can hold up. But just from a striking element, they have it. It's just size wise, are they going to be big enough to hold up? And that's something we'll have to see. And then Jacob, but even you got out Jacob Smith, who I think is more of kind of your Sam, but can maybe do some potential rushing the passer. Type stuff, and he's going to be a guy I think that's going to have a role next year with Keaton Wade moving on, potentially big role in the defense. So just a way that how it shook out, because there was a time they took Cowan's commitment, I think, in September, Nick.
Correct.
And I don't know if they knew they were going to get the Smiths or Brian Robinson at that time.
Yeah, I want to say the Douglas game was probably, 2 weeks after? But that
something
was,
like that.
That might not. That wasn't a done deal yet. But especially
Robinson was more. Yeah.
And here's the Cowan. Other part too. So Cowan's brother is a defensive lineman. That was a freshman this year, Tavian Gadsden. USC's far from home. Like, you know, he went on the official visit this weekend. It's easy to flip to play for Lincoln Riley at USC. Like, I'm sure you go out there and it's awesome, especially in December, right? I bet it's beautiful. Easy to fall for that. But, you know, if push comes to shove, that can be you revisit in the portal a couple of years from now. But what it all comes down to, Luckett, is we headline the show off of what Kentucky's getting from the portal. Well, they had 23 guys in this class. Like, you can't have it all, right? And that's, I think, something that, you know, talking to Justin Haddix or Kevin Wallace, or any, you name the high school coach, right, in the state of Kentucky. I was talking with Mail's coach, Wolf, about this. They don't like the way that the portal's pinching out high school kids. Kentucky used to take, like, the way this week would go, we would get, like, a couple random, like, one or two late commits where they're projects that they're going to be late ads. To see if, like, well, all right, let's roll the dice and see if we can do something with this.
Like an Elijah Reed.
Yeah, or a Boulay Abadi Fitzgerald, right? Like, you just, that used to be, hell, you'd have like
Calvin Taylor. Like,
yeah, exactly. And some of them, Poop Johnson, right? Like, I'm pretty sure he was a late ad, too. Like,
Josh Allen.
yeah, exactly. So, like, some of those are success stories, some of them, nothing happens. But those guys have gotten squeezed out of this by the portal. And that part, it's an unfortunate side effect. I think I'm optimistic that it won't be as bad once we get the COVID kids out of here in a couple of years and you don't have 26-year-olds playing college football. I mean, Uncle Jay.
Marcus, like, seventh-year Marcus Cox.
Yeah, we got Tyler Shook has played like 20 games in 8 years of college football. Your plumber boy. Which have you tweeted that gif no. out or
that's for friends.
Okay.
Friends of the program.
Well, if you receive the I guess we only get one more experience with it, but the luck it's a plumber gift. But long story short, to get back to it all, it does and you led with it at the top of the show, how the portal kind of squeezes a lot of this stuff. Like, let's just move the early signing period to February. Like, let's get rid of it and just do signing day in February.
Okay, what would your rebuttal be to kids who want to enroll early?
They can enroll early if they want to. Like, you just don't sign a letter of intent and you show up on campus whenever it is, right?
So, there are some schools out there, 70% of the class enrolls early.
Well, that'll be some of Kentucky's as well.
I think you're right. Like moving it back to February would be the easy answer, but
I think it would help a good amount. Yeah, like
the toothpaste just out of the tube. Like, I think David Ubbin wrote an article about this in The Athletic, and I thought he brought up some good points. They're basically just they're tied to an academic calendar, and that is their biggest issue. But then we hear guys like Brock Vandegrift, I believe in his interview with Jacob Polacek, was pretty much like, I'm not going to play school, essentially.
He'd say, he's like, I'm there to play football. Like, yeah. I graduated already, you know?
Joe Burrow had an interview a couple weeks ago. They asked him about, are you Ohio State or are you LSU? And he said, I went to school at Ohio State, but I played football at LSU.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they look, like, how they look at it, really. Yeah. It's not a school experience. It's a football experience. It's a job.
Yep.
And yeah, I think if we could act like that and just treat it like that, it would be better. If we could open up the schedule, Nick, because college football has a great off season now. I mean, the off season is awesome. Yeah, everything is just shoved down our throats over a month.
Krusty Krab burgers just coming in my mouth.
If we could somehow figure out a way to stretch this out, we would all be better, but these kids have to go to school. That's part of the deal. And there's academic calendars, and that you have to fit everything in between those or with those. And that is the issue.
Shaka, to answer your question about no letters of intent, no, you just signed financial aid agreements. It's that's been the bypass. I forgot when. I think I remember Brandon Knight doing that. Like, he didn't sign a letter of intent. He just waited and signed financial aid papers. And that's the same thing. Like, because regular students don't sign national letter of intents. They just register for school, right? You get accepted, you register. That would be the process. But I like the way you put it. The toothpaste is kind of out of the tube. Let's wind down this show by talking about potential late ads a week before signing day. Derek is worried about tackle depth, which is a Same. Fair concern because right now Nick Hall coming off an injury.
They have four true tackles on the roster right now for next
year.
Not
a lot. Malachi
Marcus Fox
was his freshman year.
Yeah, Marcus Fox, Marcus Cox, Cortland Ford, Nicholas Hall, Malachi Wood. Nick, I keep going back to this, but the way Stoops talked about Hall's injury in some of the preseason, and then when he got questioned again, that makes it sound like I don't know if he'll ever be a – there's something serious going on there. I don't know what's going on there, but it sounds like that's a pretty serious injury he's dealing with.
Right.
And then Malachi Wood was a total project coming out of high school. I think he made some good steps in year one, but he's probably not a guy you want playing snaps this year. So they got two guys right now. So they have to find I think, like, potentially adding two guys, I think, at that position at tackle is probably something they need to do.
And Brian is – bringing up the offensive line tackle from Indiana. Tough news, Brian. We found out about an hour ago that Carter Smith will, in fact, stay at Indiana. He's removing his name from the portal. That's, new head coach bump. He's bound to recruit some of those guys back. Carter Smith announced he's staying, and you'd already know if you were signed up on KS Board. So UK
won 2 months
of this for a buck. But yeah, that was that would have been a big one. He visited Ole Miss last week. He was supposed to be on campus this weekend.
Yeah, there'll be some more names to emerge, but they are gonna need to find some help there.
So you've got a whole rundown of the board on KSR Plus. It's much more up to date than the transfer portal tracker that I've got on the regular website. So make sure you're all checking that. There's Azel Purdy from San Diego State. There's a kid from Arkansas, too, that got an offer from Kentucky.
Howard Sampson, North Texas, is the guy they're in on. You're right. Drew Azzopardi. It's another tag. And all these guys are multiple years of eligibility. Montavious Cunningham, Georgia State, is a guy I think they've sniffed around on. Luke Newman's a FCS transfer from Holy Cross, who said he's gotten some interest from Kentucky. So they're casting a wide net here, Nick. So they're going to find a tackle or two. It's just who do they find? I think we're seeing tackle is more of a top priority because there's interior guys that I think they're passing on they could get. Most notably, Zeke Correll committed to NC State on Saturday. Kentucky just didn't make a move for him. Man, he's going to the ACC, going to play for a Dave Dorn team that I think could maybe be sneaky good with. They just got Grayson McCall. I like that Grayson McCall, Robert and I pairing.
Well, I like the Brennan down there in Raleigh. Robert and I won too, and that was a disaster. How in the hell did they win 8 games? And that ACC just sucks so bad.
I think they went 9. I think they went 9-3.
Yeah, like they won 9 games. And they were dog crap on offense. Like that was a disaster. Which shout out to Kirk Herbstreit for just dragging the ACC in one of the most bizarre tweets I've ever seen.
About the book he wrote.
Yeah, he just went nuclear in one tweet. Yeah. Just like kept going. That was good. I saw somebody. There's a Twitter account out there that's just like one of the worst Twitter accounts on the internet. That
you're talking about Blue Bloods?
No. There's another one that I don't even want to mention. That was like Kentucky's going to get an edge, and then like somebody else asked in the chat about a cornerback, and it's just like, just because somebody like said it offhand doesn't mean it's going to happen. And here's the thing, too, like it. This is the part where our jobs get harder because I felt like I had really good feel on up until this point, right? Like where Kentucky stood with a lot of these guys. The second wave, I feel like I got to put my miner's hat on and go back down in the coal mines for some scoop and, to like figure out. Because, you do have to cast a wider net. They've hit on their initial targets. I feel like we talked about Brock Vandegrift for a year. And look at how funny is it, too? Last year, we were talking around this time, maybe even a little bit before, Kyle McCord, Ty Simpson, Brock Vandegrift. Vandegrift might be the best out of them all, and they kind of just lucked out that it happened that way. Like, I don't know what Simpson's going to do there, but McCord might end up at Syracuse. He's going to get bumped for Rayola at Nebraska, which is just the wildest recruitment.
Yeah, I don't know if he's getting bumped or if he just doesn't want to go there to get pulled. Dug into any reporting yet. Guys are in Husker Online or on top of that. That's definitely interesting because that looked like a slam dunk at one point. And I don't think that's going to happen.
Didn't Jeff Sims transfer somewhere weird?
He's in the portal, but he hasn't gone anywhere yet. Not that I've seen.
I thought I saw he was going to Miami.
Louisiana Tech or something.
No, I thought it was like a Florida school. It must have been a fake news sort of deal that I just saw.
He would be a good fit for old Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, I guess John Rice Plumlee, he's got to be 30 years old by now, right?
Yeah. But back to DeCarlos Nicholson's the one they hosted on the visit. So that's where you got to look. Who do they host on visits? He feels like one. I feel like he would have committed already.
Yeah.
If he was a surefire take.
Which, if he officially visited twice and didn't commit, dude. Because it was 2 years ago. He was a JUCO kid officially visiting on a recruit about. Yeah.
So that hasn't happened yet. I mean, we'll see if it maybe happens tomorrow. Maybe it's a thing they wanted a commitment on each day. Interesting. Yeah. But I thought he would have been one of the first ones to jump in the boat. Right.
It felt like it was premeditated, going on the visit just as a formality.
Yeah.
Which also, which was Brock's case. He'll be here this weekend. But I think he's just doing it to find an apartment, you know. I don't think he's got to check out all the trial in the uniform, right? It was like, remember when Tayshaun Manning did his he did his photo shoot? He was just like, man, I don't need to do all that. Like, just give me a jersey. He was just in a jeans and jersey. Just like,
yeah. Yeah, you don't think he'll be at Bell's checking out the scenery? Checking out the local spots?
Didn't his dad mention that he's got a girlfriend or something in one of the things?
I think I might have read somewhere where he's maybe engaged or...
Yeah, he might be pretty serious with somebody.
Good for him, man.
He just... That picture of him with Liam Cohen. What a photo.
Like, I mean, central casting. I mean, it felt like I was like, it was like a scene out of Friday Night Lights. It just like at the Texas State High School Championship.
I mean,
his dad's Coach Taylor coaching in the game.
The part that really, like Dylan Bauer, our friend from See a Blue, pointed out, when he had the clip on his belt for his phone, I was just like, oh my God.
To
like,
me, it just wasn't even that. It was the camo coasters. I'm just like, hell yes, let's roll. This is it.
I needed to see, though, if he had a...
Play ball, fish, and hunt. Let's ride.
Does he have a dip can ring on his jeans, or does he hide it better because he's a good Christian boy, you know?
As I've mentioned on here before, I want skull rings in my offensive lineman's jeans. I do want that. I want my offensive lineman to fish. I like guys that hunt, and I want skull rings in their jeans. If they do that, we're probably on the right track.
Gosh. Oh man, this has been a fun episode. We'll have more next week. You know, as far as high scores go, Cam Dooley is one to watch. Jacob Polacek put in an RPM pick for him today to end up at Kentucky. Former Missouri commit, also was getting recruited heavily by Vanderbilt. That's one to watch. I can't tell if Rico Scott has gone quiet for purposeful reasons or just because it's gone quiet.
But, yeah, so, nothing's out there on him.
Yeah, and I think. You know, initially Stone was like trying to publicly recruit him, and I think everybody at UK was like, keep Nick Saban far away. I haven't seen if he's gone up there and visited Rico yet in Pennsylvania or not.
Yeah, that has been very, very quiet. So we'll see here over the next couple of days if any buzz comes out regarding that.
What can happen in the next 7 days? It feels like every time we do one of these shows, it's popping off left and right. But we will be back with Football Podcast Monday to get you ready for signing day, and then 11 personnel on Wednesday. And also, we get to talk bowl games for 20 minutes tomorrow, Luckett. So,
One of my favorite Saturdays of the year is this upcoming Saturday.
Oh, man, and we get CBS Sports Classic, like just North Carolina.
You get three NFL games, you get the good college basketball games, and then you get stress-free bowl games that are just perfect gambling opportunities. You know, they're just like, oh, we'll just dabble here. And they're on all day. It starts at 11 a.m. It goes to midnight. It's just a perfect day to just sit back on the couch and watch some ball.
And people complain about, oh, it's all about who wants to be here. Well, if you find a team that really wants to be there and one that doesn't, you can live bet them just like that. Like, it's not... Pull that trigger. So I'm looking forward to it. We'll see you tomorrow on the Pigskin Preview. He's Adam Luckett. I'm Nick Roush. Go Cats and go Kroger.